Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On the first part of today's Underreported, we will explore some of the alternative voting technologies being used throughout the world, with an emphasis on the challenges of setting up accessible, accurate voting systems for developing democracies. And joining me now is Andrew Reynolds, an associate professor of political science at the University of North Carolina. Welcome to my show.
Thank you.
How is voting done in most countries, especially the developing democracies? Is it usually paper ballots?
Increasingly so. I think a lot of the traditional methods have been largely phased out today, and developing democracies are being quite innovative with putting colors on their ballot papers and symbols and, in many cases, photographs of candidates as well to try and make the ballot more accessible to both literate and illiterate voters.
So those are advantages of paper ballots. What are the disadvantages?
Well, there's only a certain amount of information one can communicate on a paper ballot, and it still obviously leaves space for manipulation and fraud in the counting process. But I think it's quite remarkable how little the casting and marking of ballots has really changed over hundreds of years. So there's got to be something to recommend the system if, even with our technologies, we haven't replaced paper ballots in much of the world.
Have hanging chads been a problem in other parts of the world?
Similar types of issues about how the ballot is designed. Perhaps it can be confusing. It's interesting that there are little nuances to the colors on a ballot or the way you actually physically mark the ballot that can affect the actual ultimate results. Sometimes even putting the ballot upside down, if you're an illiterate, has affected the results in Latin America. So the way actually you mark the ballot can have these hanging chad effects, but it's obviously slightly different in the developing world.
You observed elections in Afghanistan. Were paper ballots used there?
Yes, and very colorful, well-produced, glossy ballots. For the presidential elections, they were in color with the photographs of the presidential candidates and their symbols. For the legislative elections, it was a much more confusing system because you had many candidates elected from each province, and you had many candidates on the ballot. So in Kabul, for example, you had 400 candidates, each with their own photograph and each with a neutral symbol that was given to them. And it was quite difficult to find your chosen candidate on that booklet ballot of 400 faces.
On the other hand, if it had been done electronically or some other way, it might have even been more difficult.
Yes, and I think the practicalities of most developing world countries would suggest that electronic machinery is difficult to bring in. In Brazil, there's been quite a lot of good innovation in computerized voting. I think Mexico is moving in that direction as well. But in our cases like Iraq or Afghanistan or the Sudan, other African cases, really the context is not ready. The infrastructure is not there to use that type of technology.
Well, is the only disadvantage of paper ballots that they take longer to count?
I think that actually that's not always a disadvantage in the sense that you can actually have a very visible and legitimizing process of seeing the ballots counted and seeing them counted by your observers, agents of each candidate. A nice example is that in Ireland, the north and the south of Ireland both use a similar type of election system. It can be computerized, and in the six counties of the north, they do computerize it, but in the south, they still like to do it by hand because it's a sort of public festival and celebration of the elections, and it takes them a couple of days, but they do it by hand even though it could be computerized.
What are the key concerns every voting system in developing democracies must take into consideration?
I think overwhelmingly it's two major issues. One, that it's accessible to voters regardless of their political involvement and education levels, that they understand how they vote and they're understanding what they vote for. And secondly, that the system, however it's run, is perceived to be above board and is fair and removed from all the scope of manipulation and corruption that we can find. In Afghanistan, there was a huge amount of manipulation and corruption in those first elections. Even in good elections, in inverted commas, such as South Africa, their first elections, there was still a substantive amount of ballot stealing and fraud and manipulation. So any system really has to cut down the space for that type of stealing of ballots or general fraud.
What about privacy? Is that a part of the security consideration?
It is, and one can, you know, clearly see in Afghanistan, even the scope for women to vote was influenced very strongly by the fact that women had separate polling stations operated by women, and that allowed them some psychological freedom as well as physical freedom to vote along the lines that they wished. Security generally is such a major issue in a post-conflict or a continuing conflict case that just allowing people to feel as though they can turn out and express their preference secretly is quite crucial.
Well, isn't that something that should be of concern in elections in Sudan? I know you've observed there. In Sudan, if I understand correctly, votes are counted by having people physically line up behind the candidate of their choice. That's not very private.
Right. Well, I mean, the traditional method in the south of Sudan has been lining up, and the candidate with the longest line wins. And perhaps we shouldn't forget that America was using the same system until the 1890s. Kentucky only discarded that in the 1890s. So it is a system that emerging democracies have used. It is obviously one that is not feasible for a secret ballot and not feasible when you have many candidates needing to be elected nationally or countrywide.
But what about in a near totalitarian state like Sudan, where people might notice that you're on the wrong line as far as they're concerned?
Oh, absolutely. And clearly the new government of the southern Sudan will need to be elected with secret ballot mechanisms. But it requires the international community to provide the resources and the expertise to help that happen. It's obviously a huge undertaking to run an election that is a brand new experience in such an impoverished country.
The Gambia just held presidential elections this past September, and they use a system that involves marbles counting votes. You also observed a similar situation in Botswana. Does this work well, and how does it work?
Well, up until recently, a few African countries maintained what was effectively the colonial era system of just putting the appropriate colored marble in a single box for each candidate. If you wanted the red candidate, then you put the red marble in the box. It is a quite workable system and has advantages in its simplicity. It also has disadvantages in the sense that you may secretly put your red marble in the box, but if at the counter table there's a huge bowl of yellow marbles that have been not used, you understand who's not doing well. And so there are problems with secrecy of that system. But Botswana only threw off that system about 7 years ago. And so it has been used in a productive, successful African democracy for quite a long period.
In the Gambia, it was introduced in 1965 because of the high illiteracy rates.
Right. And I think this speaks to the point that however one does it, there are innovative methods of allowing the less educated in society to play just as productive role as the educated.
So the real problem is developing unique systems that satisfy the needs of the local population, but still maintain international standards?
Absolutely. I think that's the best way of putting it, that you need the election to be free and to be legitimate and to be secret, and you need to allow people to express their will and that be reflected in the results. But at the same time, you need to accept the local realities and local cultural traditions and try and model a system that feeds into those foundations of societies that may have done things quite differently than the West.
If you were asked to come up with a system for some country, would it have to be different in each case, or do you see some ideal system that could be applicable almost everywhere?
Well, partly it depends on what you're electing, if you're electing a president or a parliament or local elections, and then it depends on how many candidates you're choosing from a given district. But that being said, I think the trend towards more colorful and more ballots with more information on them is a very good thing. I mean, even the Republic of Ireland, which is not a developing world country, obviously, now has colorful photographs on their ballots for their parliamentary elections. And what you're trying to do is give as much information on the ballot as possible so you get everybody making a valid choice.
Thank you for participating in today's Underreported. Andrew Reynolds, an associate professor of political science at the University of North Carolina. By the way, since we've been talking about voting systems around the world, we thought you'd want to know that on tomorrow's Please Explain segment, we will focus on a controversial voting system right here in the United States, electronic voting, how it works, and whether or not you can trust it. That's 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Thank you again, Professor Reynolds.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.